"Oh, yes, you may," I said. "Right here, please do." And there beside me, on my solitary bench, she sat down, her thigh in its smooth skirt touching mine in my rumpled trousers. Yes, that's her, I thought. This silken-voiced woman of the world. This is Miss Two, leaning into me, looking across me, apologizing with murmurs and touches for the quick progress of our intimacy. Miss Two was speaking to me, talking about my hand. "In concert," she was saying, "I play a more modern instrument, really the descendant, the great-grandson of the kind you have. Isn't it just like me?" she said, laughing and touching my thigh. "How I always think of them as male. It must be the valves," she said. "The fingering." And I thought to myself, how wrong a first impression can be. Here I had assumed Miss Two to be a kind of vestal virgin, a traveling priestess, sanctifying the station with her meditations on the slow passage of time. Now that I was, getting to know her, I could see only passion in my memories of her unwavering gaze, only the outward-looking inwardness of a bold and sensual artist. "It's only the second or third I've ever seen," she was saying, "if you count that one in Milan. My teacher had a very good one. He let me play it once." She paused to laugh and touch my thigh once more, leaving her fingers gently upon me for the whispered conclusion. "But his wife objected, as if she owned it. Well, that was the end of that. Time to find a new teacher, anyway." I caught what she was saying only in snatches, and I had to struggle to keep up my end of the conversation with an occasional nod or choking grunt of assent, though she didn't seem to mind. And as we talked, as she talked to me, I could feel my hand becoming part of myself, fully at last a part of me, swelling up with her attentions, aching to be played, to release the music it held within. Its satisfactions would now be my satisfactions, its joys, my joys. Then there was a pause. Was it my turn to say something? "Well," she said, "may I?" She looked at me, her green eyes sparkling, the joke being the preposterous idea that I might possibly refuse. "I have to put it on my lap," she patiently added. "You know, to play it." "Of course," I said, and I reached over with my good hand, my other hand, the hand I still took for granted, and I pulled back my cuff and with the strength of both arms tried to lift it up off the bench. I turned back and gave her the sort of look I'd given women before, when we ran into technical difficulties in bed, when a condom, say, refused to unroll or a towel was urgently needed, a look that was meant to say, "Relax, now don't worry, this is all part of the fun. I still want to, I still can." I gave her that old, reliable look, but I saw she was staring, no longer at my hand, at my beautiful, built-in instrument, but at my wrist, at the boundary, the margin, the place of attachment. "There's something I should tell you," I said, "before we go any further. This instrument, it's not just a thing I own, it's part of me. Part of my body." "Oh, I see," she said, and her lips pursed, and her small, round Adam's apple moved as she swallowed once quickly, and her cheeks grew pale, and her eyes, her green flirtatious eyes, tightened with horror, panic, and disgust.